the elusive dream of peace in Gaza.
We have certainly made some steps forward. There's still work to be done.
At Secretary of State John Kerry, speaking after a meeting with UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon regarding a ceasefire in Gaza. While talks between Israel, the U.S., and the head of the Palestinian National Authority in the West Bank, Mahmoud Abbas, or Abu Mazen as he is also known, while those talks have been taking place, the key Hamas demand for any ceasefire may be the main issue right now. We will not accept any initiative that doesn't lift the siege on our people and respect their sacrifices, said Hamas leader Khaled Mashal from his headquarters in Qatar. As the humanitarian situation deteriorates, the exchange of weapons for the lifting of a siege is way too simple at this point, says Jody Rudoran, Jerusalem bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times.
Well, I think from the outside, John, it seems like a really kind of nice exchange, right? Like, let's improve the economy of Gaza and let's take all the weapons out of Gaza. It sounds like a perfect solution. But I don't think there's a lot of Israelis or Palestinians who think that could ever happen. You know, the Israelis are convinced that Hamas and the other militant groups need to be demilitarized. But they also think that that's a main part of their reason for being, and that they'll never allow their weapons to be taken away in the way that supposedly Syrian President Bashar Assad allowed with the chemical weapons. And of course, Palestinians are desperate for economic change in Gaza. And most of the international community that's familiar with this place understands that it's a terrible, terrible situation made worse by the crackdown in Egypt. And there just absolutely needs to be a change for the long-term future of Gaza. So it seems like a good exchange, but I just don't know how they're going to get there politically.
It's Jody Rudoran, Jerusalem bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times. Veteran Middle East negotiator Ambassador Martin Indyk sees all of this as an unsustainable stalemate in an increasingly unstable region. He's the former U.S. Special Envoy for Israeli-Palestinian negotiations. He's now the Vice President and Director of the Foreign Policy Program at the Brookings Institution. Indyk says extracting a deal right now that would cause either side to bring something new to the table is very hard to imagine.
The status quo in Gaza is really a miserable result of the loss of so much life here, particularly innocent life, that both sides will see the need to create a kind of transformational deal in Gaza. And that deal would involve two basic elements. One, a complete lifting of the siege and free flow of goods and people and fishermen are allowed to go out to the 12-mile zone and reestablishment of normal life for the people of Gaza and reconstruction. Over 2,000 homes that have been destroyed in this horrible war. And in return for that, the disarmament of Hamas. No more rockets to be fired against Israel. Some arrangement to ensure that there are no more tunnels to be used to launch terrorist attacks inside Israel. And you have a kind of complete, comprehensive change in the circumstances there.
So that's something that Benjamin Netanyahu could conceivably do unilaterally if the U.S. would be a guarantor of the disarmament of Hamas. Is that a reasonable scenario there somehow?
You have to factor Egypt into this equation,
right,
as well.
Right.
Because one of the most important passages is from Gaza into Egypt through the Rafah crossing. And the Egyptians have been loath to open that. In fact, they haven't opened it for several years now. They do not want Hamas to be able to put people into the Sinai because of the security situation there. So you'd have to have Egypt as party to this deal. Of course, the Egyptians are playing a lead role in trying to get the ceasefire, so they are participants. But yes, there would have to be not just international guarantees, but an international force that would have to go in under a UN mandate to actually take control in Gaza and hand it over to the Palestinian Authority once the disarmament has been achieved. Look, it's a nice idea to contemplate, but it can't happen unless Hamas comes under such pressure, both military and diplomatic, that it decides that it has no choice but to disarm. And I'm not advocating that because that would involve far more severe loss of life on both sides.
We were talking with some of your colleagues in the sort of long-standing diplomatic peace process really over the last few years, again, in this kind of brainstorming conversation. And one person said something interesting, and that is that Hamas right now is in a position to take this the long game, sort of the long view, that they're in a position to absorb more punishment. They're in a position to sort of stay in this kind of fire rockets status quo, and that it's Israel that's not necessarily in a position to continue with this situation on an open-ended basis. Would you agree with that?
I think as time goes on and the Israelis try to get Hamas to stop firing the rockets by applying military pressure, that the international condemnation of Israel grows. Now you've got the UN Human Rights Commission investigating war crimes. Of course, they're investigating Hamas's war crimes too, but it's not the same thing. But the lives of Israelis are now being disrupted in a way that is not sustainable over time. What comes of that, though, is that the pressure then grows on the Israeli government to, as it were, go all the way. That's what the Israeli foreign minister is arguing in the security cabinet. And so the balance will shift in that direction. And going all the way is something that Israel has the capability to do, but it would mean the reoccupation of Gaza with its 1.7 million Palestinians, street-to-street fighting, a large casualty toll of civilians on the Palestinian side because Hamas is using the civilians as a shield in Gaza, and high casualties on the Israeli side of soldiers. And I think there's a real reluctance on the part of the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, to go down that road. But he's susceptible to public pressure, and it may get to that point. So I wouldn't think that Hamas really has a long game option here that is risk-free. They run the risk of actually losing the whole game, even though Israel would pay a very high price in terms of international condemnation.
Ambassador Martin Indyk, do you think that there's a leadership change here that needs to happen? You spoke earlier this month about the really difficult chemistry between Prime Minister Netanyahu, Abu Mazen, the head of the Palestinian Authority, and the leadership of Hamas. That's a sort of moving target. Where does that stand now? Could there be any sort of game changers with a new personality in the mix here?
The antipathy between these two leaders was a real problem for us in the negotiations, no doubt about that. There may be, I have to strain to see this, but there may be a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel on this front because of two things. First of all, Abu Mazen, the Palestinian leader, committed to security coordination through a very difficult period, which we've now kind of forgotten about because it's been superseded by this horrendous conflict. But this was in the West Bank when the Israeli kids were kidnapped by Hamas operatives. And Abu Mazen defended the security coordination between the Palestinian security forces and the Israeli security forces at that time. And I think that had an impact on Prime Minister Netanyahu. Now, in the midst of this conflict, Abu Mazen is standing by the Egyptian proposal for a ceasefire, which is what the Israelis support too. And essentially what you see emerging from this, though the Palestinians would deny it, is a kind of convergence of interest between Israel, Egypt, Abu Mazen, and the others, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, the UAE, in favor of taking Hamas down. None of them want to see Hamas come out the victor here. And to the extent that Prime Minister Netanyahu recognizes, as a result of this, that Abu Mazen is, in fact, his partner, that it is then in his interest to strengthen him at the same time as he is weakening Hamas, that might produce a process that leads to overcoming the antipathy. But it's a long shot, and I don't want to sound like a dreamer.
Finally, Ambassador Martin Indyk, is there some sort of broader kind of Asian pivot, global view here that might re-energize these talks, change the incentives, involve a different set of interlocutors here that anyone would find credible?
Hard to see. I think it's important to remember that up until the war in Gaza forced out the other images from our television screens, there was a hell of a lot else going on in the region, and it's still going on, whether it be the extension of the negotiations with Iran over its nuclear program, the challenge of stopping ISIS from forcing the fall of Baghdad, the ongoing war in Syria. Somebody pointed out to me yesterday that there are more people dying in Syria than are dying in Gaza, but that's no longer being focused on. A Saudi official said to me just a few weeks ago, before the war in Gaza started, and I was talking about how we might find ways to resume the peace negotiations between the Israelis and the Palestinians, he said to me, "We just don't have the bandwidth for that at the moment." So that's the you know, widen the lens to the region. There are much more important issues for the regional players than this one.
Martin Indyk, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, John.
Ambassador Martin Indyk is a former U.S. Special Envoy for Israeli-Palestinian Negotiations, now the Vice President and Director of the Foreign Policy Program at the Brookings Institution.